Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John, and this is How to Murder Time, a podcast about games and things.
Hello everybody.
Watcher.
We're back with another week.
We are. Quite a light week for me.
It's like summer, January lull, isn't it?
January lull.
Before anything gets released, there's just not a lot coming out and not a lot to talk about.
Well, I've got all the very static group stuff, but I'll talk about that another week, I think.
Yeah.
In terms of what I'm actually doing, I think it's just because I'm quite busy. Got lots going on.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah. Not much time for gaming of other stuff.
And some of it doesn't involve hills.
Yeah.
Do you want me to start this time?
Yes, I think you probably should.
I'm going to start with a new game.
All right, what you got?
I basically am a sucker for anything Star Trek, so I really like to be disappointed.
It's a hobby.
Yeah. So I've been playing Star Trek Timelines.
Star Trek Timelines? What's that?
John Radoff's new game, which is basically a Star Trek mobile game.
Okay.
And I need to be careful here, because I know for a fact that people who make the game know people who listen to this, or perhaps listen to this, but probably not. So
don't let them bully you. Tell us what you really think.
Diplomatic.
No, you just tell us what you think.
It's an interesting game.
Interesting game, okay.
The idea is that Q turns up,
yep.
And the timelines have been...
No, you lost me right there.
He does the frontier bit at the start, yeah.
My dreads were first realised when the phrase Q turns up was first used.
Yeah, with John Delancey.
Okay.
He used to be a...
Proper Q.
Yeah.
Mm.
And basically says that all the time... There's a spatial anomaly that's fractured all the timelines, and now everyone from everywhere can now interact with everyone.
Okay. Quite a lousy excuse to be able to use the ships from all the different series.
And the people. It's mainly a thing about people.
Okay.
It's about crews and away teams, which is where it's actually quite clever.
Okay. Hang on. It's just starting to sound familiar, but go on.
Yeah, it does sound sort of familiar. Mm. I will give you that.
Mm.
The main part of the game is missions. You go and have to do a mission which will have a series of branching tasks. First one may be you've got to talk someone down or something, which will need diplomacy.
Mm.
And
this
so,
is still sounding familiar. Carry on.
So you need this little Federation symbol-y diplomacy logo.
Yeah.
Not at all familiar.
Yeah. Still familiar. Keep going.
But there's a number behind it.
Yeah.
Each person has a skill, a stat for that skill.
Okay.
Yeah. And they have to get over a certain amount to complete the mission.
This is still sounding familiar. Carry on.
And so you send that person off to do this, and it happens instantly.
Yeah.
And then there's a fudge roll for adding a couple of extra random points.
Mm-hmm.
So you can always try and underplay stuff. There's extra points for stuff like if you're sending people with the right skills, which it highlights up. You've got a list of feisty and all these things.
It's still sounding familiar. Keep going.
Yeah, it does sound quite familiar.
Yeah.
If you pass the mission, then you move on to the next one. Or if you fail it, then the last bit of the mission gets harder.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you pass it really well, then you'll get a rare bit of gear
to equip. Yes.
And then, so after the first one, there'll be a branching one. So it might need a medical person, or it might need a phasery person.
These people, do they come in packs of 20 people that you can buy for gems? I mean, Zen points. I mean, cash shop currency or whatever.
No, it's not quite as meat grindery on the personnel side. But yes, you do pay money and get a random assortment of people.
Yeah.
And if you pay in-game cash, you get common ones. If you pay dilithium.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. You're going to use dilithium as a currency.
This sounds to me like a shameless knockoff of the duty officer system from Star Trek Online, turned into a standalone mobile game.
It's not quite, but it's close enough to make me think, hang on, this is very familiar. Mm. Hang on, actually, this works a hell of a lot better on a mobile phone than it does in a stupid MMO.
Well, I wonder. I mean, the duty officer system in Star Trek Online is quite good and quite a fun little mini game in itself. I wouldn't say it would be something that would make me play for 3 hours of a time, though, but then as a mobile format thing, you know?
Yeah. But it's not quite
the same. It might be a good idea. It might work.
It has a bit more structure. There's a lot more planning. You've got three slots when you go on a mission.
Yeah.
And you'll need five or so different things.
That's the Admiralty system from Star Trek Online.
I've not seen that.
No, well, that's the one that opens up when you're like 50 or so, and basically all your spare spaceships become cards in a similar game. But with the Admiralty system, each job only allows you to send three spaceships on, and each ship has a psi stat, attack stat, and an end stat, and you have to, between all three of those ships, beat the numbers required for each particular mission.
Yeah, it's sort of like that.
Sounds like you're describing.
You're making choices. Am I going to send a medic, a doctor?
Yeah.
Or not?
Yeah, an engineering ship, a tactical ship, a science ship.
And so you basically have, you know, the first one's one choice, then the next one is three choices on the mission branches, you can take.
All right.
And different ones, if you complete it, you get rare. If you ace it, so get over the score, mm-hmm. then you get the rare gear, and then you're basically trying to replay missions so you get all the rare gear.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And, you know, I've not played this extensively, because to say the game is shallow...
Well, yeah, it is a side activity in a mini game in yeah. Star Trek Online. That, you know, they're not really there to do that.
It does work as a mobile game.
I suppose,
although,
yeah.
I will say, there is a almost compulsory $2.99 purchase to be able to play it properly.
Of course.
Yeah. Because you know,
because no one does this stuff for the joy of the art, no.
Which makes you upset, because you're thinking, oh, I don't want to pay $2.99, when in fact I would have paid $2.99 for the game just to try it out.
Oh, I see. So just not make it free to play and just charge $2.99 for it and give the stuff away for free.
Yeah, but then that gives you a daily bit of the in-game currency
mm-hmm.
and also lets you do more missions, which is the problem. If you don't have this and you're doing it, after a couple of minutes, you'll just hit a wall and not be able to do any more actions without paying real money.
Well, that's the tried and tested format for the entire thing, which is why I tend to find most mobile games hateful.
I hit this so fast, though.
Yeah.
I was just getting to my stride thinking, oh, now I understand the systems.
Now I'm ready to play for real. Oh.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Come back in 3 hours.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely how these things work.
And the game scuppers itself at every point.
Get you interested, then draw the hook in, reel you in a bit more. It's all like really quite sinister and involved psychology and marketing, you know. And it sounds like it's just being played out by the numbers and by the book in this Star Trek franchise thing.
Now I'm
going to
start the game.
Yeah, go on then.
And you're going to watch it starting.
I'm watching it starting. It says Disruptor Beam.
Yeah.
Okay. Enjoyed best with your sound on, it says.
That's another thing that annoyed me. It stopped my podcast I was listening to.
Oh, it interrupts everything, does it? Did it want all the permissions?
Yeah.
Permiss all the things?
Hit play.
I don't want to... Okay, I've hit play.
Oh, we didn't do it.
Didn't do it. Right.
No, most times when I saw...
Were you expecting a full screen ad for unrelated interests?
No, it's a full screen ad saying pay 40 quid and unlock some stuff. Which does not give me a good opinion of your game.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm just in full derisory mode now and have no intention of buying it from what you told me.
I don't recommend anyone buys it.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry if you are involved in this game, but you know it's a cynical mobile cash grab, which is buggy as hell. Some of the UI keeps turning up underneath the other UI. It crashes regularly.
So it doesn't sound like it's worth $2.99 to begin with.
No,
in the grand scheme of mobile gaming. I mean, I appreciate you want to earn money, and I appreciate there are ways you do that. Usually, a little ad strip along the bottom or something, whatever. I don't know, but you got to try and respect your players a little bit. I think.
Oh, there's another thing.
Yeah,
this is really, really inventive.
Yeah,
you can basically have another set of things where you have these missions which just need the skills. It doesn't need the numbers, so you'll need a command.
Now that is the duty officer system. Yeah.
And then they go off in a shuttle.
Yeah,
they go away for a couple of minutes to a couple of hours to a couple of days.
Yeah,
they come back and they give you stuff.
That is exactly the duty officer mission. So, it's not even that surprisingly original. I mean, the remarkable thing, I suppose, is that they got the license to be able to do this rather than had to come up with their own space adventure.
I'm not entirely sure how they got the Star Trek license.
I don't know. Perhaps it's really not that expensive. Perhaps we could afford it.
Possibly. Mm. Well, I am working on the 40K license.
I don't know. I'm not impressed, but then I'm coming from a very low bar in the first place.
But
I don't really like mobile games.
The reason why I want to talk about it is
that
ability to have the three-man away team,
mm-hmm.
choosing the ones you want to send, the skills you want to send, and how good they are,
mm-hmm.
it actually feels the most Star Trek-y that any Star Trek game,
or
even film, has felt like for a long time.
You should really give the Admiralty thing a go. Have you got a max level character in Star Trek Online?
Well,
I think it's 50 plus
I think I'm probably 50.
Yeah, yeah. You should have a hand around looking at because I think you'll find it interesting in comparison to this game.
Yeah.
The mechanics in play and the way it's used. It sounds very... very derivative, to be honest.
It does.
It's like they haven't really thought of any original game of their own. They've just sort of taken some of the side game, mini game bits from Star Trek Online and turned them into a standalone mobile game.
I was playing this and just thinking constantly, this is basically every other game, and specifically it is Star Trek Online.
Yeah. Yeah, and it must be sort of mathematically and systems and design-wise relatively easy to design and put together. And I suppose it's just putting the art assets and sounds and things on.
No, it does have it has some things in its favour.
Yeah.
It has a tiny, really low resolution sample of all the characters saying something random just before they do stuff.
Yeah, the very minimum amount of effort required to make it merch for a recognisable IP, you mean?
Yeah. It has some drawings of which you're going to be looking at some of them thinking, who the hell is that meant to be?
Oh, right, okay. Clip art. Fantastic.
Well, no, it's all got an art style. It's just, yeah.
I don't know. I'm not convinced, frankly.
No, I'm not entirely convinced either.
And especially when you consider that Star Trek Online is literally free to play. You can get all the way into this Admiralty stuff without paying them anything.
Yeah, but if you want to pay them stuff, oh boy, can you pay them stuff.
Well, yes, obviously. Everyone's got their own cash shop nowadays. But, you know, I suppose if you didn't have a PC and only had a mobile phone, this might be a substitute. But then the whole duty officer thing is not even the main feature in Star Trek Online anyway. It's just there as a side thing.
Oh, there's space combat.
Yeah.
Which is literally a case of you have three abilities, heal and... two, depending on what you've chosen your bridge crew to be. And you just have to hit those whenever they come up again. So it's even worse than MMO combat.
Wow. Okay.
It's not very hands-on, this game.
No, it's sounding not terribly good, to be honest. But I could be wrong, of course. And also, one of my New Year's resolutions this year is that I'm going to like everything now. So I think it's brilliant, but also not very good.
No. I think that it's a brilliant example of its type.
Yes. It's very good for its type.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yes, it does everything that a game of that type should do to be of that type.
You get exactly what you pay for. It's, yes.
Well, disappointment, yeah. Yeah, so in summary, the best Star Trek game is still Star Trek 25th Anniversary.
Yes.
See,
wow.
No one can argue with that.
No, that's... No. I don't know. I did actually give it a go not so long ago. And it's fine, but the space combat bit is terrible.
The space combat bit is terrible.
Yeah. It's this tiny little window, because it's all done from the back of the bridge, looking across the backs of all their heads at this tiny little window on the front. And the controls are awful, and it's in 320 by 240 pixels or something
really
like
hard.
That. And yeah. And it opens, the whole game opens with you being in a training exercise with a friendly ship.
You don't have to pass that,
and
though.
It, yeah, I know you don't have to pass it, but it really sets a really disappointment level very early on. You know, you're the Enterprise, you're Kirk, and you're in a training exercise with another thing, and it doesn't tell you how to do anything, so he knows you're going to lose straight away. And that just made me really annoyed, but the point and click adventure of it all was fantastic. I remember that. It's good stuff. Look for that instead. You could probably run it in an emulator on an Android phone or something.
No doubt you can.
I expect there's some way to get that running on the phone, so do that instead of instead of this. Mind you, I imagine touch screen on a 320 by 240
it's gonna be even harder to play.
All right, don't do that then. All right, good.
Anyway, not recommended.
So you don't think it's any good?
It's interesting. It's just interesting because I've seen it before.
It's free to download and have a go at, I suppose, but presumably you don't really want to be sinking any money in there.
No, do not sink cash into this thing.
Yeah. But you can find something quite similar in Star Trek Online with the duty officers.
Yeah.
Which the duty officers themselves come in at about level 10 or something, and the Admiralty bit with the spaceship starts at about level 50.
The duty officer system isn't that interesting
either. No, it's a side game, and I don't imagine anyone expects it to be more, except the people who wrote this mobile game. Oh, well. I suppose I better talk about a thing. Like I say, we've got lots of static group stuff going on. I'll talk about Rift a bit. We've hit a raid we can't finish.
Yay!
Yeah, excellent content. Deleted. Progression stuff. No, well, I don't know. I suppose technically. I don't know. I have to have a think about that. No, I've decided that I was only bluffing all along for that. Everyone knew. What kind of stupid idea is that? Destroy the guild if you can't finish a dungeon?
This was your time. This is your opportunity to have put the line in the sand.
No. No, we've been raiding now. We've got a bit of a resurgent interest there. Lots of people, a couple of people coming along and starting up new characters and coming along and joining up with us. It's all good. I think Triumph of the Storm Queen, this was the first in the level 60 raids that we had a go at. I didn't get any video for this, sorry. I was too busy going dying lots.
I'll run some other random
I've got some random Rift video somewhere stock that you'll be watching instead. Fantastic. It is a 10-man raid. We did check. I'm not allowed to join raids without everyone checking now after the incident. And I think we had about seven people. There's a bit of issues with levels and gearing. I mean, we're all mostly 65. This is a 60 raid, but we were short manning it with like three or four people missing. So the it's just a series of bosses in the bottom of the big tower in the middle of Brevain in one of the Storm Legion regions there. Fighting just various bosses, a bit of yard trash between each one. So the first one's some Falconer guy, big spooky guy with a cloak and glowing eyes and stuff, hood and so on. And he keeps calling in griffins as pets during the fight.
That sounds fun.
Yeah,
sounds friendly.
Well, it's quite a dancey boss, that, and we wiped on that one. So we bounced back up and had another go, actually watching what he was doing this time. So the things he does, he's got this... He keeps resurrecting pets that you kill as adds. So each time you kill one of his adds, he gets more powerful. So it's a sort of soft rage timer. You have to can't keep going all night because eventually you'll become one hit kill type stuff.
Yeah.
When the pet is about to die, it blows up, doing incredible damage for anyone standing nearby. So we had to have a second tank, which was keeping it busy and moving it off to execute it in a dark corner somewhere, which was quite mean but necessary. Then the boss does this thing where he puts these massive domes down that sort of expand and then cause massive damage, and you have to sort of move him all around the room he's in so that you can find safe spaces to do it. Quite a technical fight, but we got through that one in the end. The loot was rubbish. It was level 60 purple gear that wasn't as good as anything any of us had had. Of course. Second boss was better. It was some sort of giant warrior dude. A bit spoilerific, to be honest, if you haven't got through all the story. That's the thing. They tell all the exciting sort of soap opera-esque story of all the main characters in this game in the raids, and often before them as well. So we turned up and there was a guy, who I'm not going to say who is because it's very spoilerific, but I didn't understand why he was there at all. But we got to kill him anyway, which was a bit shocking. The actual fight was quite technical. Every so often he puts this debuff on the tank, which reduces your hit points by 10%. And okay. He does it in three goes at a time. So if you stand around and let him do it enough, eventually you'll be down to 10% of your hit points and one hit killable. So this was one where
doesn't
we have to actually
nice.
Switch tank. We had me and Wish doing the two tanking there, and we were basically swapping aggro and soaking up three casts of that each time, and then they'd wear off, and then you could switch the tank back again. So... that was quite interesting. And then, of course, the room itself explodes with fire. And there was a lot of shrieking from the back row of dress wearers that I didn't really pay much attention to be honest. I was just busy doing the ping-ponging with the aggro on the main boss. So that was quite easy. We got that one in the first go. Then there was the third boss, who was some sort of wizard type. And that was an absolute nightmare because he's not so bad. He does, you know, quite a lot of lightning damage, a bit of a small AoE, that kind of thing. We were working it, managing it. But every so often he does a thing, and a row of wisps appear along one edge of the battle arena. Obviously it sort of seals you into this large square area, and one side four or five wisps in a straight line appear, and they're connected by lightning, and they move slowly across the room.
That sounds unfortunate.
Yes,
I considered earthing.
If that lightning hits you, it kills you instantly, but the wisps are killable. So what you're supposed to do is kill a wisp which punches a hole in that lightning wall, and the phrase "bring on the wall" came to mind.
Yay.
It is basically that. Yes, you have to go, as soon as you see that wall appear, you go mad and try and kill at least one wisp, which creates a hole. Then everyone has to get in line with that hole and let the wall pass through them, which is fine, and we were getting the hang of that. And then in his murder death super phase part two, he does two walls at a time, and that can either be two walls opposite each other, which come towards each other, which basically means the group has to split into two and wail on two wisps that are next to each other to create a hole in both of the walls, so that when walls cross each other, you're still in the hole. Or sometimes they do them at right angles to each other. And that was an absolute bugger, because we killed one wisp in the hole, created a hole, and then the other wall moved across the hole and sealed us into a corner where there was no way out and we haven't got enough damage. We think it's a DPS problem. We think we're not killing these wisps quickly enough to create the holes fast enough so everyone can get in the way. I had to go at DPSing and trying to lead the target painting there. I got confused and killed us all, you know, as I do. And that was fine. So we gave up there. We couldn't do it. We gave up.
Yeah.
It was getting late, took quite a while to get through the first three bosses. So, you know, obvious ways to improve. Obviously, three more players wouldn't hurt. But I think we need to make sure that everyone's actually 65 and also gearing. We've got quite a few people who've had a rather indifferent approach to MMO loot over the levels. Because we've mostly been leveling most of the people in the guild up by doing these Friday dungeons and stuff. So which means most people in our guild don't bother with the, you know, log on lots of times during the week and go and do solo storyline missions. And that's a shame, because the solo storyline stuff tends to give out the appropriate gear. So you end up fetching up at 65 with competitive gear to start on all the other stuff, whereas there's a lot of a lot of updates and improvements we need to be doing for everyone's gear. So we've been doing major rifts and intrepid instant adventure stuff just to try and get everyone up to the max level. Once that happens, we'll have another go at the gear shopping regime, make sure everyone's wearing appropriate footwear. And then we'll try again. But it's nice to have a point in a progression that we're at, as it were. I mean, we don't have to necessarily do it all linearly. We don't have to finish that one before we try another. But it's interesting to find something that we've now can't do yet, but could do. It never strike me as absolute hopelessness. We could have done that fight, I think, if we'd have been had a bit more oomph and a bit more coordination, yeah. A bit more practice. I mean, we are very casual. We turn up to these things with minimal prep. We don't even look up the walkthroughs or strats for the first go.
So that much is obvious.
Well, when we wipe, then we'll go and have a look at wikis and stuff and see what we should be doing. And then it's a question of, it's not so much not knowing, it's can we execute what it's expecting us to do. So I'm not discouraged at all. It's in a way, some of the earlier stuff was perhaps a little too easy. I'd be interested to see how we do when we get to actual 65 raids. I've got a feeling we're just not going to be able to shortman those, because
there'll be absolutely no wiggle room left.
Absolutely, yeah, because this is the sort of stuff that people who are really dedicated and good at the game spend all their time trying to get right and trying to learn to do. So it would be absolutely unrealistic to expect us to just us dabblers to just rock up at the end 65 and start seven manning this stuff that a lot of other guilds spend week after week trying to get right. So eventually we'll get a frustration barrier, we'll get to the point where no one's enjoying it anymore, and then I think that will be it. But I think we've got mileage, we've got a couple of months more, I'd imagine.
Just in time for the division.
Well, who knows? Who knows where we'll go after that on the old Friday game? But it's very much the case that everyone's finally getting to, and a lot of people are sort of expressing quite a shock and surprise that they've managed to get an MMO character to max level, which is something that for a lot of the folks in the guild, that is just not normally a realistic proposition. Not necessarily because these games are too difficult or they can't do it.
It's time.
Yeah, they're busy people with lives, and also they're only very casually interested in this stuff. They're not obsessive theory crafters and stuff, so just getting there at all is quite an achievement.
I would admit the only times I've ever got max level in any MMO was in a group.
I haven't done it that much either. Me, the MMO obsessive who's spent like 12-15 how many years have we been doing this podcast? Yeah. A long time talking about MMOs and playing them excessively. I still can only perhaps count 3 or 4 MMOs as max leveled characters. I just don't get there in a lot of them, and that's not for one to put in the time in, I can tell you. So it's nice to be able to just get there at all, and then have a dabble and perhaps try some of the things that they want us to do at endgame. But bear in mind, almost everything they want you to do at endgame is designed to keep you busy until they've got another expansion ready.
Yes.
So these tasks are by design very difficult, very laborious, take ages, not very much in the nature of instant reward or instant feedback. So It's very much a gear change when you get to the top. You suddenly find the game becomes something else. And parts of that might be appealing to us, but I wouldn't see it as any kind of shame or defeat if you just decide, we've had enough now, that's fine, let's try something else. That's a sane approach, I think, in many ways, because a lot of people tend to very much obsess about this stuff. You put far too much time and effort into just the one game, the one character, trying the one dungeon over and over and over again.
It is incredibly easy to just keep going on the same thing you no longer enjoy just because you put effort into it.
And it's compounded when you've got friends who apparently are enjoying it as well. Yeah. I mean, you all need to be honest with each other as well as yourselves in these guilds as well. Otherwise, you'll find yourself suffering just because you think everyone else is enjoying it. I don't know. I don't think we're at any stage in this Friday Rift Guild where we need to be having that kind of discussion yet, but it'll come. And we'll be reasonable adults about it and move on to something we enjoy instead, I think, probably.
Yeah.
And that's natural and fine. It's nice to have a healthy outlook for a change, I don't often do that. So that's a rift. Anyway, talk about something else.
I'm going to talk about Just Cause.
Okay.
Just Cause 3.
Just Cause 3, yeah.
Did they ever talk about it on the show?
Yeah, I think you mentioned sort of the basic premise and stuff. You're obviously still playing it, though.
Well, sort of. It's not really grabbing me and keeping me playing. I logged in today because I needed something to talk about, and then thoroughly enjoyed myself blowing stuff up.
Did a
couple of plot missions, got really fed up with the plot missions being stupid.
Are you just not digging the story? I mean, the story was almost not negligible and quite tongue-in-cheek. Is it they try and play it a bit more seriously this time?
Well, no, it's still very tongue-in-cheek. Like the fact that I was parachuting towards a missile being launched, grabbed hold of the missile, and then...
Oh, you do that a couple of times in 2.
Yeah.
In the story there.
Yeah, yeah, and all the time while having a conversation with people about it. And yeah, that's well in the Just Cause mold, but yeah, it just doesn't feel right. The funniest thing in the game is David Tennant still.
Yeah.
I am still taking up military bases just to hear David Tennant be a bit upset about being kidnapped.
Fair enough.
But it's explosions and trying to find new and interesting ways to take out a base.
So you're finding the story's just not that compelling, or you're not getting into it, or
it
it's getting in the way?
It had me transferring barrels of wine in the back of an open truck.
Yeah, I saw that one. That was yes.
That is my level of...
substantially boring mission by the baseline excitement of just normal gameplay in there.
But some of the missions are really big set piece, lovely bits, and some of them seem to be dialed in by the intern.
Yeah.
It's like they got through and thought, right, we're going to need some padding.
We're going to need some story. Yeah.
So I'm not sure about it, to be honest.
Well, you just push a bit here and there, but is the open world flying around and parachuting around, blowing stuff up stuff still interesting?
Immensely, but, yeah? And there's always a but, yeah? They got rid of the collectibles, so the collectibles are a lot less now.
Oh, okay.
It's not as if you're going around finding thousands.
So I'm quite obsessive, so that was all right in two, but there was about 100 of each sort in two, and there was like 4 different types of collectibles, so it took quite a long time to find.
Yeah, but it always meant you could log in and do something. At the end of this... I reckon I'm going to have finished it and there'll be nothing left for me to do and I'll be bored and move on. Whereas two, I was still diving in years later thinking, oh, I could get a couple of those because I just fancy a bit of grappling around.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I'm a bit worried about the longevity of this one.
You don't think it'll last anyone? I'm still playing two at the
moment. Exactly, but I don't think this will.
Okay.
But it is still fun. There's an awful lot of fun things.
Worth a buy, but not as astonishingly amazing as it was.
Yeah, it's not as good as 2. That's the problem. Okay. Although it's better than 2 in many ways, it's not as good as 2.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have started hitting the performance issues.
Yeah, and I've seen it hitching and staggering a bit there, and you haven't got a sluggish PC,
no,
have you?
No,
so, yeah.
Yeah, it's basically...
Is that just bad optimization, or
is it pushing it?
Do you need a better PC?
Most of the time it's fine clocking away at max frame rate without... care in the world, then you'll get a couple of explosions that will put it past
just
it.
Start
you'll enter a new area which forces some loading and it'll stutter. And it's just minor things which are a little bit annoying, but stuff that you don't really expect these days. So, yeah, it's weird. It's odd and weird and very odd. But I can see that most of it, the main goal of designing it, I think, is for the spectacle. Of course.
Yeah.
But also...
Is it a game that's more aimed at YouTubers than players?
I think there's an awful lot. There's a lot of YouTube videos that started doing stuff in it.
Yeah,
and
now
there's only a couple left who do it.
Oh, they get bored. Well, that's bad. Because if the whole game's designed to be at its best when you're watching somebody else play it on YouTube, then if all the big famous YouTubers and stuff are getting bored of it already,
yeah,
that means it's failed.
Yeah, there's one who's still doing it. But then again, he's the biggest Just Cause fan ever.
Yeah.
I have to ascertain whether or not he actually liked it on version 1 or not.
Is all the sort of socially connected networky stuff any good in there for you? I notice every time you do a thing, it rates you and then compares you against your friends of yours who've played it.
Sort of, but
does that lead you to play to try and outdo them?
It doesn't cause any problems, but the problem is I have this strange attitude that I don't care what other people think of my abilities.
Yeah, yeah.
So
you're just not that driven to
out-compete. I don't feel the need to try
friends.
And beat people apart from when I'm doing it for a joke.
Yeah,
unless
fair
it's
enough.
Forza, in which case I feel the need to stay ahead. But, yeah, when I see somebody's grappled up higher up the world than I have, I think, oh, good for them.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's
not really a hugely impressive thing there, then.
No, so, I don't know. It's weird. It should be brilliant, but it isn't. It's just great.
Is this an expectation thing? Is it that everyone was so impressed with 2 that they thought 3 is going to be amazing? You know, with that sort of mistaken fallacy that all things will get better always, forever, always, over and over, you know? Things can get worse as well as better, generally, I find.
Or sometimes things can be seem to get better and actually get worse because you've just got too many things in it.
They've sort of over-egged it and not really understood what it was about their own thing that made it
possibly.
Work well.
But it's incredibly easy to, when you're doing these things, to just look and miss.
I have to say, it looks fun. I mean, I'm looking forward to getting
it. Oh, no, it is fun.
You know, I just don't buy new games, but
it's
it's on my list, certainly.
Over Christmas, when I did that, right, I'm going to play Batman and finish it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just played it solidly for a couple of days.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that with this. I would get bored.
because too much spectacle. You just
and just too much repetitive.
Just
spectacle.
Get a bit jaded with it.
I'd be doing the missions and get fed up with the missions. Then I'd go and do the liberations, which are great, and I love the liberations. They are still the best bit about it.
Yeah,
they are.
Yeah, just taking over the map sector at a time. Yeah.
Yeah, even when you've got somebody heckling you that you're meant to start on the outside and work here, which is certainly not in the spirit of the game.
Well, you kept dying, which I thought was counterproductive to the liberation.
There
I thought perhaps if you tried not to jump straight into the middle of the base and then attack it all at once, maybe
you'd survive.
There was
a destroyer in the base who kept shelling me.
It's like artillery going off everywhere. Big red circles you had to get out of all the time.
Yeah. Which made it really hard to hack the anti-aircraft missiles.
Mm.
But yeah, no, it is good. But there's just something missing.
Yeah,
I don't know what it is.
Take it with a modicum of caution, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's not quite as amazing as you might think.
No. So, I do recommend it if you like that kind of thing. But I don't think it's going to convert many new people to the series.
Yeah, but then by the sounds of it, it's not necessarily for the fans either, so...
I'm not entirely sure who it's for. They tried to make it slightly different, and I think that it came off slightly worse for it.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah. Anyway,
okay. I'm going to talk about Minecraft because I've fallen back into that again. I was playing Worm Unlimited, and it's good, and it's its own kind of placid outdoor rural build a farmyard type simulator. But you can't beat Minecraft for the immediacy.
No.
Which is very compelling. You know, Minecraft's about getting lots of things done, and you can do them very quickly in Minecraft, whereas Worm Unlimited is about getting lots of things done quite slowly over a very long period of time. So,
yes. You
know. Well, it's specifically this regrowth mod thing that I saw you playing that, and I thought, oh, that looks interesting. Because I haven't really done much with these, but apparently this is a real thing with Minecraft these days. The mod packs have things called the hard quest mode... quest book thing? I don't know. I'm not sure what that's actually called. Quest books.
Yeah, it has a quest book which just has a long list of quests, and somebody will have made a story or a list of things to do, mainly a list of things to do, which drives you through, and you go through it, and in the end something has been achieved.
Yeah, and so this regrowth one starts from a premise where the entire world has... an unspecified apocalypse has happened, and you find yourself basically on an immensely bleak... flat plane of cracked sand, which is a sort of rock-like substance that serves no utility or purpose. There's a whole bunch of dead trees sticking around the place with no foliage that you can sort of hit for wood to get started, some slate lying around on the ground, and bits of dead grass that you can just about eke some seeds out of. And it's up to you to essentially rebuild the entire world.
By the end, you will rebuild the entire world.
And that's a fantastic premise. The thing with Minecraft is it's the ultimate sandbox, do what you like, especially if you're playing in survival mode. You've got the sort of combat aspects of it as well, and then finding the resources, building things, but there's not, you know, it's a game that unapologetically leaves you to find your own direction. You just go and get on with it. They sort of added the vanilla Minecraft has a sort of achievements sort of web diagram which sort of guides you into, you know, and discovering how to do things one at a time in roughly the right kind of order. But these quest books are a way to massively structure and add narrative to a particular Minecraft experience. Basically, the quest books will present you with a series of tasks. Go out and find, you know, 10 mud or whatever. Once those are in your inventory, you can push the complete quest button, and it will tick off and unlock other quests, and as well it can give you rewards, and, you know, it'll give you some grass to put on the mud or something. And using that, these various mod authors are creating, you know, some quite astonishing narrative experiences. There's quite a few in the Feed the Beast launcher, which is where I found all this, but I think you can get it from a cursed launcher as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyone who knows Minecraft knows how to find all this stuff, I'm sure. But there's all sorts of stories people are trying to create and tell with the Minecraft as the underlying engine. And then, yes, you bring in like hundreds and hundreds of third-party mods as well, which add all sorts of gizmos and gadgets and weird plants or train sets or whatever. And, you know, blending all that together and then using the quest book as a way to direct all that and create a story of sorts, you know, in as much as you ever get story in Minecraft, I hesitate to say that it's what completes Minecraft, because I don't think Minecraft was designed necessarily to be a story-based RPG or anything. No. You know,
I think it's something that after you play it, you realise that Minecraft needed it.
Yes, yeah. I mean, obviously...
Whereas everything else in Minecraft is needed
I've played a lot of Minecraft in the past, and I'm broadly familiar with all the vanilla stuff. And yes, I suppose I can just sort of... forge off and decide I'm going to build a massive castle or whatever, or, you know, an interesting train set or, you know, replica of the London Underground. But having a sort of a story and a quest narrative to work through sort of does structure it better, gives you more purpose and drive, and I'm finding it really useful.
I do think that Regrowth actually encourages that even more than Vanilla.
Yeah.
The do build the stupid things. It's very resource limited.
Yes.
Yeah, you start off with nothing. There is no ores in the ground.
No metal in the ground.
No metal in the ground. You have a couple of things. You start off with seeds, then you start crossbreeding seeds, and you work your way down the quest list until you suddenly get resources through the seeds.
Yeah, yeah.
So you'll
various essence plants.
Yeah, you'll get coal essence quite early on, mm-hmm. which you can then use to make coal. And after you've started making coal, you effectively have as much coal as you could want.
It's a fantastic allotment simulator. Yeah.
And there's earth ones, earth seeds, which mm-hmm. are basically a nature seeds, and you can use them to make stone
mm-hmm.
or dirt or whatever, or sand.
Yeah, all the stuff that you'd normally expect to be just lying around in a vanilla Minecraft, you actually construct in a narrative.
You get to a point
sense.
Where you can automate making dirt or making stone very easily.
I imagine all the machinery and stuff's in there. I just haven't really got that far enough.
And also stuff like there's fire seeds.
Mm-hmm.
Which you combine them with a bucket and it will give you a bucket of lava.
That's useful because, again, the lava's quite hard to find.
Or your lava's in the world still. Or you put it into the furnace-y thing, the smeltery thing,
mm-hmm.
and it will just make lava that way. Yeah. So in my world, I made one of those which then piped lava into everything else and just filled up my entire world systems with lava to power it.
See, this is the thing with the mods. Okay, vanilla Minecraft, been there, done that. Yeah, occasionally they up the version and add new kinds of granite and stuff, but on the whole it's very much relatively early on you start looking for mod packs, and there's this Regrowth thing incorporates a whole load of mod packs which is made by lots of different third party authors, you know, people hacking away and creating interesting and amazing things. But there's about 120 mods in this Regrowth pack. They all get sort of blended in as you start it up through the launcher. And that gets really overwhelming.
Yeah. Well, that's
but this, these quest books are a great way to teach you, you know, work your way through
like
mods
the
and learn them.
20 packs, and you basically end up with just this massive list of things to do.
Yeah.
In this, it basically starts you off saying, right, you're going to start dealing with some of the, was it Agricraft or something?
Yeah.
To make the seeds. And
then it moves on to the Britannia.
Yeah, then it goes on to Britannia and works through that for a while. Then it'll start introducing bits of the other magic ones.
Yeah, the barrels one.
Yeah, and it just introduces you to, if you want to learn how to play all of the mods,
yes.
This is the way to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Because we've done some quite collaborative Minecraft servers, you know, Daze has hosted a couple for us for the How to Murder Time gang. And, you know, it's been great. And I've seen some astonishing and incredible things. People have just rushed off to build like these like AI inventory matter transference systems and laser printing and, you know, all sorts of craziness. And there's me sort of, you know, putting sticks together to make a fence.
Yes.
And just wondering how I get to do the cool stuff. And I just haven't had the time or the research to actually learn it all. So picking a well-structured mod pack like this Regrowth one, for example, is a great way to, get an education in all the different things that are possible with all these mods. So it make me a better player, I think, in future going forward. But I'm just fascinated because there's about 150 quests or so, 200 or so quests in the book in total, I think, maybe more.
I think more open up.
Yeah, more open up, I guess. So, yeah. So there's, you know, the continual, I suppose, you know, it could be, I can get so far with freeform sandboxes, but eventually I find myself needing some kind of direction. So it's useful just to have that, you know, these things laid out to have a go at in a sort of order that makes sense, that gradually introduces these new astonishing powers on top of each other in a logical manner. It's good fun. And and also just the basic premise of it. I just love the idea of starting with a post-apocalyptic world and fixing it, you know?
There's a couple of similar ones. There's Agarian's Skies, which basically starts off with a small platform and next to nothing. A void world, and you have to
there's no world, you're sort of building that out from nothing as well. Yeah, I've heard about that one. Yeah, there's all sorts of other sort of story-based, quest-based mods out there in the launcher as well. I think there's one where you get banished to an alternate dimension by some court because you unleashed sort of the taint on the world or something like that.
There's a crashed spaceship one.
Yeah, there's some sci-fi sort of themed ones as well, where spaceships and dimension apertures and all the rest of it. Yeah.
I think they're definitely worth looking. I do have one complaint, though.
Yeah,
they're all very samey. They all tend to be Minecraft
ultimately,
and they're all work your way through all of these technologies, and it does turn into right. You're going to make this thing, then you're immediately going to make the upgrade for it and the upgrade for it.
Yeah.
So the first two things you make, you're never going
to
use.
The quests must seem quite similar from mod pack to mod pack, I suppose, yeah. if you're working through this book that's attempting to unify it.
Yeah, well, you must have hit some of these quests where you're just doing something like you make the first type of chest and you can make a +2 upgrade. And you're thinking, right, okay.
I'm just doing this to tick off quests. Yeah. And you just stuff the results in a crate somewhere and forget about them. Yeah. But they'll come in handy eventually.
So you're doing all this low-tech stuff and getting to the high-tech versions of it and just discarding stuff. And it does feel like you're just doing stuff for the sake of it.
Perhaps it's up to you to decide when to stop and just go build an interesting castle or when you want to forge ahead with quests, tick them off, you know?
I did that once. I got
I'm bored of this, being told what to do.
I got to a certain point and thought, right, I'm going to go do something, which I did it, came back, and then the next quest I unlocked was one to make what I was doing an awful lot easier.
But there's no time pressure, though, which is what I like as well. The book doesn't, you know, you don't have a limited time to get these quests finished or whatever. There's no overall threat. You're just pottering. But, you know, when you want some direction, here's what we think you should do next in a book, you know, which is great. So it's sort of, it's a sort of halfway house between the absolute rigidity of some rail shooter or, you know, linear quest-based RPG or just vanilla Minecraft, which is, here you are, go do what you like, you know. So it's a sort of happy compromise that I quite enjoy.
It's definitely fun.
Yeah, so I'm going to keep pressing on with this regrowth thing and see if I can get all the way to the end.
Yeah.
I'm quite pleased with the garden I built up anyway. I don't have a garden. My flat is on the second floor of the block, and I don't really miss mowing a lawn every week, but, you know, having a sort of mini virtual garden like this is quite satisfying.
It's a shame
quite pleasing.
You don't miss mowing a lawn every week.
And I'm never going to own an allotment because, you know, allotments tend to have 30-year waiting lists and things. why not do it imaginarily?
Your grandchildren will get allotments if you sign up now.
So I'm not really going to get the gardening itch or to be able to scratch it in real life, but this is an acceptable substitute, I find.
I think
Minecraft in any of its forms, but this particular regrowth quest mod pack thing is very good. It definitely scratches the itch.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any plans to... There's a bit of rumblings on the Steam group about starting another server.
Yeah, I think I
deliberately didn't say anything. Poor Days. I imagine Days would like a someone else ought to host it, I think. He does a fantastic job of server modding for the last couple of Minecraft servers we've had. But
I suspect it's going to be a little while before that happens. Anyway.
Probably someone else's turn by now, I should think.
Because I think we need to wait for a couple more mods to update.
Yeah. In terms of buggy and stuff, this regrowth thing is not released. It's a beta, I suppose, version 0.9 something or other at the moment.
9.1 at the moment.
And they recently patched one in that broke it all for me, and then they patched it again. That's right. In the space, so the one I picked up initially was 0.87 or something. Then there was one in between which decided to arbitrarily change that flowers can't be. Flowers had to be grown on tilled garden earth all of a sudden, and then the one after that they changed it back, so I had to completely uproot and reload a whole load of flowers onto different terrain and stuff. Stop mucking about with this stuff. Then there were some bugs as well that wouldn't let me launch the thing because you had to manually delete a previous config folder.
That was a fun evening on Mumble.
Days was on the Mumble server and talked us all through it. It was fantastic. He's got some fantastic support skills there. But, so be a bit wary. It is in development still, but from what I can see, it's probably quite close to being done, quite close to being finished.
It's getting there.
I think the trouble is, this is going to be the sort of thing that will always have to be continually updated as each of the individual mods it depends on are updated, yeah?
Yeah.
Or does it just take a version and bind all in?
It takes a version and binds it all in.
Okay.
So what will happen is you just leave the server there and you never hit upgrade.
Okay.
And you just leave it going.
Yeah, that's probably the smart move.
Yeah. Never hit upgrade on your server. Never, ever hit upgrade on your server.
Yeah, veteran Minecrafters will probably find it a bit quirky in that a lot of the standard recipes you know and love...
Oh, everything's changed.
A lot of them are changed and are different. You do have to essentially let the book guide you through how to get to all the resources because there's a lot of changes to how the basics work in here as well.
But some things have been made very expensive.
Yeah, but it works well with the narrative, you know, with the story and the adventure and the journey of it all. I like it. It's good. Yeah. Good times. So, yes, back on the Minecraft again. I don't think you ever really quit. Anyway, over to you.
I'm going to talk about a game called Downwell.
Okay.
Never
heard of it, but that doesn't mean anything.
This is a game which looks a little bit Spectrum-like.
Oh, wow, look at that. Yeah. That screenshot there. Wow.
It's a game where you start at the top of a well and you drop down it.
Okay.
Okay, and then you have to get to the bottom.
I think I remember a game where there was, you had to jump up lots on a sort of notepaper.
But
background.
You have guns in your shoes, which will slow you down as you fall, and make you go up if they're strong enough. Uh-huh. And there's ledges down there, and lots of enemies, and there's shops.
It sounds very retro.
It's incredibly retro, but it is incredibly fun.
So I'm getting a Manic Miner vibe from the whole thing.
No, not really, because it is basically a reverse platformer. Okay. So you're going down.
Oh, you're trying to fall.
Yeah, you are.
That's good.
You're trying to build up your combo by not landing on the ground. When you land on the ground, you recharge your guns.
Yes.
So you reload your guns, but also you'll lose your combo.
Your score multipliers.
So it's basically one of those daily play it score multiplier type games where you're just trying to get up a high score and beat your thing. And I'm finding it incredibly relaxing.
Yeah.
It's just one of those. It's my current. I want to play a game for a couple of minutes. I will play it kind of game. Which, you know, I was using Gilded Dungeoneering for a while.
Okay.
But that got a little bit samey. So I'm now doing this, and this may get.
It's good to have a game like that on the go.
But yeah, I'm really enjoying it. It's fun. You unlock upgrades. You can do stuff like change the colour palette and stuff.
Yeah.
It may look spectrumy, but it gets Colour Clash wrong. So
that's not Colour Clash isn't something to strive towards. That was a physical limitation of the hardware.
Oh, it is. It controls beautifully. Is interesting enough to keep you going and difficult enough to keep you going.
Mm-hmm.
And it just keeps me occupied whenever I just want to fill in a bit of time with a mindless bit of repetition.
Sounds like a small but elegant game.
It is very small, very elegant.
Sounds good.
And I think it is worth having a look at.
Right. Where do you find that?
It's on Steam.
Everything's on Steam.
Probably elsewhere as well, but it's on. What more do you need than Steam? Yeah, it'll probably turn up on either Xbox or PlayStation at some point because these things do, if it's not already there.
Cool.
I don't really look at what's releasing on the consoles anymore.
Yeah. Have you fallen out of love with the consoles then? Are they finished? Is it the generation reaching its natural end? Is it just a bit of a lull?
You mean turning them on?
I think you'll always be a PC gamer at heart.
Yeah. I got to turn it on, then I got to push the button on my TV to move it over.
And then you got to find it's got a patch.
And then it's got a patch because I haven't turned it on for 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, that's a problem that just gets worse.
Then I got to find the controller.
Yeah,
which isn't that hard actually because it's stuck to my wall.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh.
But then I got to realise that the controller's out of power and it needs charging.
Meanwhile, PC Gamer is up and running by that point.
Yeah.
By then, yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah, it's just the thing. I see very little reason for me to use a console because my console sits next to my PC. So I might as well use the PC.
Mm.
So it's only exclusive games I really play on.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? It's about the only reason.
Or I use it to moan about PlayStation Plus games being.
How long have we got to wait till the next generation of consoles, anyway?
A long time. Yeah. Long time.
Long time.
7-8 years, I reckon.
Wow. So we've got to make do with what's there.
Or, if you want to believe Valve, any day now.
Oh, yes. I'm not, I don't think they really understand. It's not really an operating system issue, is it? I'm not going to replace my PC with a Steam console either, you know.
No, I don't know what they're... I know what they're trying to do.
Yeah, trying to own the PC game market.
There is a point. Actually, there's a valid point here. Nintendo were about to announce their new replacement for the Wii U.
Okay.
Because the Wii U failed.
Oh, yeah, Nintendo, I remember them.
Yeah, they're still a thing.
They're the ones with that plumbing simulator.
There'll be no footage of Nintendo stuff under this video, by the way.
All right.
Because they are gits about
it. Physically difficult to get the video for that?
They do copyright claims on everything.
They're really heavy with the ban hammer on YouTube. Okay.
They're just... wrong. They
right.
Are
well,
wrong.
Screw them then.
But yeah, they're releasing the NX. Now, there's a possibility.
Yeah.
They're not going to do it because it's Nintendo. Mm. But there's a possibility they release something which is just so much better than the PS4.
Yeah.
Graphically.
Yeah.
That it's going to win the generation by default because I think that releasing a couple of years after a console gives you an advantage.
No hair in the tortoise sort of thing.
But that's
something.
That's also what I think Steam's trying to do. I think that
you just sort of hang in there until you've got a really good chipset that's quite competitive.
4 years down the line from the console launch, PCs are an awful lot faster for the same price.
Yes.
And if you start competing against consoles in that space,
yeah.
you could start making those consoles look incredibly dated if you're clever.
It could work.
It's not going to work.
No.
No, it's not going to work.
Right.
But there's a theory it could work. But it's not going to work.
Yeah. Yeah, oh well.
So yeah, you
console schmonsole.
You never know; it might work. But the best thing actually that Valve have put out has been that Steam Link, which basically just streams the games from your PC to your TV.
Oh, the big screen thing, is it?
Yeah. So you put the bit of hardware under your TV, and so when you want to play in front of your TV, you sit on the sofa and play the games.
Yeah, that'll work.
Which, funny enough, works really well.
Controller and a telly, just streamed off of the PC. Yeah.
Any game which is also on console, funny enough, plays perfectly with a controller.
Yeah, yeah.
You wouldn't want to play a first-person shooter that needs mouse and keyboard, but...
Well, you could probably make the mouse and keyboard work with the telly as well. I don't know, coffee table or something.
Yeah.
Very long cables.
Yeah, at that point, then, yeah.
You might as well just be using the PC, yeah.
You might as well be just sitting at a desk at that point.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Mm.
That's the future of console gaming.
I'm looking forward to it. Everything's great.
It's either revolutionary or just the same.
Mm. Good.
It does
one of those things.
Yeah.
We're great pundits.
We are. We're the best pundits ever.
Well, I'm out of stuff to talk about.
I'm probably out of stuff as well.
Did the spiel.
You can go along to YouTube, where you can like this video and subscribe if you want to see more of them, or you can go to howtomurdertime.com, where you can see all of our previous podcasts going back many, many years, even back when we recorded something else.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also go along to stuff like our Steam group, and there's even a Slack now and stuff like that.
Although yeah.
Slack goes Bing constantly.
Slack goes Bing.
The Slack app is rubbish for notifications.
I don't know why I can't make the Bing noise go away.
You can have all the notifications turned off.
Yeah.
You can pause notifications for an hour or so, but you can't just have it so I would only like these notifications then from this channel and only Bing once in an hour.
I think it was primarily designed as a work collaborative tool, so, you know, make
but
of that
Bing's
what you
on
will.
Every message. If you Bing once... Then you don't need to Bing. I want a period where it bings once, then it won't Bing for another X number of minutes.
Anyhow, yes, so you can join that or do some talking word shape things on Steam discussion forums.
Yeah, leave us comments, send us the...
I think that's where the current chatter about Minecraft servers is going on.
And if you got any questions and stuff you want to ask us and get or
questions
to talk about, then go along to
put us on the spot. Why don't you?
Yeah. Then go along to Twitter, and you can find the links to that either at the end of this video, or I've never mentioned that before, have I? Or you can go along to howtomurdertime.com and click the Find Us in Games button, which I've got lots of links to stuff.
Splendid.
To be honest, we're really easy to track down in games. We tend to use the same names.
Mm. Yeah. Not always. Sometimes I hide.
Yeah. So.
So
no, I've got nothing else.
No, right. Okay. Well, with that, we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.